It was not so long ago that we talked about trends in homelessness across the country. The results of surveys of the population released by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, shows a decline across the country, but increases where we live. Both Oregon and California showed gains in the numbers of homeless people in last year's point-in-time count. Even though the numbers are released late in the year, the counts themselves come much earlier. Today is the day for the point-in-time homeless survey in Jackson County. Let's talk about preparation, execution, and what is done with the numbers. Two guests to join us here on The Exchange. Connie Wilkerson, Constance Wilkerson, is back from the Continuum of Care. She's the manager of the Continuum of Care in Jackson County. Connie, welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Mike Burke is with us as well. He's with Access, Inc., the action agency in Jackson County, and he's also a member of the Veteran Street Outreach Team and Support Services for Veteran Families. Mike, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff.
So let's talk about the basic reason for having a point-in-time homeless count. It seems fairly simple to divine, Connie, that we just need to know how many people are out there needing services.
Well, HUD requires that every continuum of care perform this count every 2 years, but we feel it's important to do it every year so that we can see trends, but also so that we can connect people to services and we can determine what are the barriers. And the reason it's done in January is so that we have a comparison every year. So they mandate if you do it, you do it during the last 10 days of the month. And it's when the weather's possibly at its coldest. And so that helps us understand how many more shelter beds are needed or how many more transitional housing beds are needed. Because if people are living outside in vehicles or tents or other places not meant for human habitation during this time in January, it stands to reason that if there were shelter beds, most of them would avail themselves of those beds instead of the other places where they're now dwelling.
Meaning this is a time of year when few people would voluntarily live outside.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What were the numbers last year? I know it's interesting because you actually saw a decrease in Jackson County, although Oregon saw an increase. Is that right?
Yes. It went from 732 in 2018 to 712 in 2019.
Given the vagaries of a count like this, is that a number to get excited about? I mean, was it something that caused any sense of like, yay, we're getting somewhere?
It was a small decline. So I guess we'll know more after we take this year's count to see if that's going to be a trend.
And for the people who are not familiar with the continuum of care concept, fill them in once again, please.
It's a HUD-mandated entity, but more importantly, it's a community-wide effort to end homelessness by connecting those who are experiencing homelessness with resources and to help them navigate to stable housing and to help those who are at risk of becoming homeless enter into prevention programs.
So it really is about really connecting the program, so that all the programs involved with services for homeless people essentially are aware of each other. And
yes, okay, we work collaboratively.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike Burke, talk about the kinds of stuff you do with homeless people at Access.
Well, I specifically work with veterans, and I try to go out and I go to different events that are in the valley that are geared towards food pantries, meals, things of that nature. I walk around the greenways occasionally and things like that. I go out on the greenway sweeps with the Medford Police and the Jackson County Sheriff's Department. And we try to connect people with services, basically. I specifically work with veterans alone, so I can do more with veterans because there's more resources for veterans. Try to do that, and then I'll just try to get more people information that I encounter as well. We encounter more people that aren't veterans for the most part, but when I do meet people that aren't veterans, I try to say, well, go register at the Kelly Shelter, or try to go try to get some health care someplace, or other types of services. I'm kind of like a signpost to a certain degree to get people linked up with services. So I'll try to point them in the right direction. Some people need a little bit more handholding with regards to veterans and things like that. And then I encounter the same people pretty continuously that I try to point in different directions and try to link them up.
So you're a walking kiosk in a sense. People can.
I'm a walking signpost, I like to say. But yeah, I try to make referrals to different agencies or my own agency, the VA, things like that. So.
Two things I want to explore a little further then. I mean, you talked about the fact that you tend to meet more non-vets than vets among the homeless population.
Yes. I mean, nationally, I believe it's only 14%. Don't hold me that number that are the homeless population are veterans. So there's a great need. I feel that there's probably some services for non-veterans to go out there and do more things. And we're starting to really realize that, I think, as a community with the Kelly Shelter coming on board and other services and things like that. But there's quite a few people out there that I'll go on that greenway sweep and maybe I'll encounter, maybe with the police, and I think the most I've ever encountered is like 3 veterans. Mm-hmm. I mean,
in a group.
Not even in a group, individually. Mm-hmm. I mean, just throughout the night. Mm-hmm. So that type of thing.
But you mentioned there are more resources available for veterans. Like what?
Well, the Kelly Shelley, for veterans, we have a VA right there in White City, which is a great resource. I mean, the SSVF program, which is a national program, which tries to assist homeless veterans or people in danger of being homeless to get housed or maintain their housing, which is a great program for veterans. It's one of the things that we try to emphasize in our community. I mean, there's flyers in most of the libraries and things like that to try to explain our program or try to reach out to us to try to help. So then we provide those supportive services where we'll help people get a home with like a security deposit if they're homeless and try to maintain them. And then we'll case manage them to try to become self-sufficient within a period of time. So, and then we'll also try to link them up with the VA services for healthcare or other community agencies for healthcare like Options or whoever else is available. So,
and for the people who aren't familiar with the Southern Oregon Rehabilitation Center and Clinics, Source, I guess, is the terminology for it now. I mean, it's a residential component too, right? I mean, back to the days when it was called the domiciliary.
There's a residential treatment component to it. So they do have people that come there, I mean, basically for treatment or other services. I mean, it's a pretty big facility. They provide a lot of services for veterans, healthcare, mental health, addiction services, things like that. And there's inpatient services where people stay there. There's outpatient services. So it's pretty, maybe one-stop shop for the most part. If they're probably more complicated medically or things, they'll go up to Roseburg. So.
Which has got the actual hospital, per se, yeah. We're talking about homelessness and services for homeless people here on the Jefferson Exchange in the view of the point-in-time homeless count, which happens in Jackson County tonight. It is done annually. It's only required biennially, but it's done annually in Jackson County, and this is the night of the count. Mike Burke is with Access, Inc., the Veteran Street Outreach Team and Support Services for Veterans Families, and Connie Wilkerson is back with us from the Continuum of Care in Jackson County. Questions, comments from you. Welcome on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. An email from Ann, no town given, wants to know, how will homeless persons be counted in the 2020 census? Now, which is not directly part of what you're doing here, Connie, but has it a subject that's been broached within the confines of the continuum of care?
We are involved with that. We're working with some census staff to determine areas that really do need to be included in the count. And we're giving them a calendar of community events where people experiencing homelessness may be gathering for a community meal or a street outreach event. And we're also looking at places where we conduct the count every year just to give them some indication of the areas they should cover.
So talk about some of the logistics here. I mean, just because it sounds like a real scatter operation where you're trying to get it done. You get a week in which to do it. You mentioned that the 10 days at the end of the month, is it?
We can only do it up through the end of January, so we'll be doing it up through Friday. And at social service agencies and community meals, we can still continue the count, and it's called point in time because it goes back to the point in time of Monday night. Where were you dwelling Monday night? But we primarily do the street count on the night of the count, which is tonight, and we have areas zoned out where teams go in to conduct the count, and we rely on information from Greenway Sweeps and also from last year's count, and we have people with lived experience of homelessness going out with us as well to help us find all the areas in which people are dwelling.
And there could be some pretty good hiding places, I would think.
There are. And we try to be very respectful because, you know, it is late at night and I wouldn't want to be roused from my slumber to participate in the survey. So we're very appreciative to everyone that participates.
Mm-hmm. How many people altogether does it take in terms of the volunteers who go out and do the counting?
We've had about 100 volunteers this year working with us, and 60 some of those will be involved tonight in the actual count.
Mm-hmm. And what about the other 40? What are they going to do?
Well, they helped with assembling backpacks and other essential goods that we give out tonight to individuals that are participating in the survey or individuals we encounter who need those items. And then they'll also be working at some of the events during the week to do the counting.
Talk about the backpacks. You were saying to Mike as you came in that 264 backpacks were assembled. Is that right?
Yes. And items were purchased through our community partners. The Access helped us, Maslow Project, Community Works, Jackson Care Connect, and the Jackson County Continuum of Care pool their resources to purchase these essential items. And so they're heavy-duty backpacks with wool blankets, also with the Mylar emergency blankets, hats, gloves, multiple pairs of socks, hygiene products, dog food, toiletry kit, and most importantly, a resource packet to tell them how to connect in with services.
Now, how prevent people from getting counted twice if they're on the move between 5 and 10 p.m., which is the general window? Is that what you're planning for?
Actually, it's 5 to about 1 a.m., mm-hmm. Yeah, because of the late-night count that Mike will be doing for us. Thank you, Mike. Individuals give us their name or their street name or first and last initial and other universal identifying characteristics, and so that's how we're able to deduplicate the data.
Okay. So that's a way for crews to get together and say, okay, yeah, oh, I see this guy. We met him too. So
yes.
Okay, one of us takes him off the list.
Okay. And so they're counted once.
All right. And do you track from year to year then? I'm curious to know if, for example, you might be running across people in this point in time homeless count who you've encountered in 2019, 2018. And
yes, we do that data mm-hmm. as well.
And what is the usual trend? I mean, how often will you have people? Is there a record for somebody who showed up for X consecutive years in the point in time surveys?
Well, in Jackson County currently, about one out of every four people experiencing homelessness classifies chronically homeless. And so we are seeing maybe 20% of the surveys every year being someone we surveyed the prior year, which makes sense if we have a 25% chronically homeless mm-hmm. population.
So, Mike, tell us about because you came in talking about this. About 10 o'clock tonight is actually when you're getting started with your field work.
Yeah, we're meeting up at the Medford Police Station with a group of volunteers. We'll team up with the police, and then we'll go out with them and try to survey the certain spots on the Greenway, I suspect, or other encampments around there that will, I mean, hopefully, well, actually, I hope I don't really find anybody, but we'll definitely encounter some folks that will be out there. And I'm sure I'll see some familiar faces that we encounter on the Greenway sweeps and other things, that maybe some new faces as well, and then do the survey and also try to provide them with information to try to get off, to see how we can help them not to be on the Greenway. It can't be too much fun out there in January, in this weather and mm-mm. things like that.
So. But, you mentioned going at the police, though, and the police are often responsible for rousting people out of those areas. They're not going to do that tonight, I presume.
No. I think the new livability team that Medford has come on board with in the last 6 months is really it's been getting some great traction. Mm-hmm. It's getting a lot of good connections with the homeless community and providers. And I would say that would be it's becoming an asset in the community to try to get those people out there. I was skeptical about them in the first place because, with my experience, most homeless people don't want to talk to the police because they have issues going on.
That was exactly the question, yeah.
So, but they're not out there to write up tickets like they do in the Greenway sweep. They're just out there trying to, and they'll explain themselves, usually, this is what happens. And I mean, and even on the Greenway sweeps, I find that the police are pretty respectful with the homeless. So.
Are the members of the livability team uniformed differently or any other way visibly different from the police who might be coming to bust people?
No, I don't even know if the livability team will be going out because that's their day outreach for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, but the livability team that's in Medford now, they're dressed just like the other police and things. So they build up relationships in the community. It's just like being an outreach worker. You build up a relationship. When I walk out and I go talk to somebody, they just brush me off. But when I go see them the second time, they'll be more forthcoming. Or I get referrals from other homeless people to say, yeah, that guy, he's cool. He'll go help you or whatever. So,
and that's why in the late night count, we ask people who do street outreach to be involved in that count because trust has already been established.
That was my next question, yes, was how you know you're getting an accurate count if you're sending people out cold. And the answer is you're not sending people out cold from the sounds of it. All right. Mike, since people probably might have noticed a little bit with your accent, you've done this in Boston too, Boston, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I've been part of we call it a homeless census in Boston, but I've done that in Boston as well, yes. So I've done it. It's a lot different here because people are more rural and it's probably harder to find and keep track of. And then also in Boston, there's a lot more services because of the population and probably because it's Taxachusetts as well. So
the nickname for Massachusetts.
So they do provide, but I mean, it's different. It's a different environment. And then there's, there's also a lot. You're basically in a city. I mean, there's encampments there, but they're very, I mean, it's pretty populated. It's hard to be able to go down the tracks and find some people sometimes. But yes, I've done it there quite a few times, more so than here. Mm-hmm. So.
And so what were some of the differences in adjusting to doing a count here?
I have to wear rubber boots, for one, to keep my feet dry. That's what I'll be doing.
Because you're not on pavement a lot.
No, you're not on pavement. We didn't really use the police when we were in Massachusetts as well, and it's different areas. Like I've done Logan Airport as a homeless outreach, but then I've done neighborhoods and I've done around the colleges and things like that, just different areas where they asked me to go. So
in addition to the different setting, I mean, very rural versus very urban, I mean, you mentioned differences in services. There's just some things that aren't available here. I mean, have you had the impulse to say, well, why don't I send you to, oh, wait, that isn't available here?
You can pretty much so if there's certain people that are entrenched in Boston that have more options, because you could pretty much so get a shelter bed almost any night of the year in Boston, depending upon. But if you're out there and you have mental health or addiction issues or whatever reasons you want to be the urban outdoorsman, you stay out there. But they have vans that'll technically pick you up. If you're on the homeless survey, there'll be a van that'll come out from my old organization, Pine Street Inn, where they would come pick up people if they wanted to come in and get warm for the night and then try to link them up with services in-house. So, and those are some of the things that they provide. So
it gets a lot colder in Boston than it does here, and I just wonder if there's a temperature at which people seem to get a little more committed to moving indoors.
It's usually later in the month, because if people have some type of income early in the month, so later in the month. But usually around November, things like that, things get a little bit tighter, a little bit more crowded and things like that. But also if the temperature hits like 32, you know, I mean, if it gets to a certain temperature, they'll allow people to stay in train stations or they have in the past. You know, I mean, they'll be a little bit more lenient to say stay in a certain train station so you won't freeze or other types of things. So they'll open up more types of spaces where people who won't go to shelters it'll be available. Kind of like how we open emergency shelters here, mm-hmm. trying to, I mean, offset some of those things of hypothermia. I haven't really encountered any frostbite cases here yet, but I know quite a few people that have had frostbite and amputations and things like that from back east. So.
We are talking about the Point in Time Homeless Survey happening in Jackson County this evening, starting at 5 p.m. Mike Burke is with Access, Inc. He's also a member of the Veteran Street Outreach Team and Support Services for Veteran Families. Connie Wilkerson, Constance Wilkerson, back with us again, manager of the Jackson County Continuum of Care. Your questions and comments, welcome on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. How big an impact do you think the weather might have on a count? I mean, it's actually kind of unseasonably warm at the moment in the Rogue Valley, Connie. I wonder if that might change the numbers of people who are out and about.
You know, you would think that it would, but when we look back at other years and we see that it was extremely cold, that might be a year that we had a higher count. And a year that was extremely wet, we didn't anticipate encountering as many people, and we did. So it's not as weather dependent as one would think.
Now, we've been talking sort of obliquely about the Kelly Shelter, which is, what, 54 beds, is
yes.
it, in Minford,
mm-hmm.
which is a permanent yeah. shelter then. Yeah. This is something that just opened in October, November?
November.
Mm-hmm. Which makes a difference then. We're talking about a place where a permanent set of beds that isn't something that, like, turns into a church recreation center during the day or something.
Right.
And it's made a difference, it sounds like.
It has made a difference. I mean, it's linking people up with services. Mm-hmm. You can capture that. If you're worried about where you're going to sleep at night, how are you going to be able to take care of the other things you have to take care of, your health care or trying to find a job or trying to find housing? So, I mean, you're devoting majority of your time trying to figure out how to survive if you're outside. So how are you going to be able to figure out how to navigate the systems that we all have to navigate, from health care to getting jobs or just those type of things to make us stable in society? So that's a great start for people to be able to work on things. So.
Let's take a call. Whoops, we lost the call. Never mind. The question appeared to come from our caller in Humboldt County, whether or not federal funding for homeless programs. I mean, how much federal money comes into the programs that you're able to put together locally for giving people places to stay or other options to get them toward a place to stay permanently?
About 2 weeks ago, we were awarded around $250,000 through HUD, and that helps various housing programs that are already existing here. In Jackson County, we do a collaborative application that COC does that on behalf of partners, and Then back in October, we were able to get another $150,000 just for winter sheltering. And some of that went to the Kelly Shelter. Some of that went to Options for Helping Residents of Ashland and to the Youth Shelter at Maslow Project, and then to some of the severe weather shelters. So that was state funding, but the $250,000 was federal funding. So various sources do come in, and we try to pull upon as many sources as we possibly can to help these programs.
The winter sheltering thus far, it seems like, is only based on temperature. Is it never based on precipitation? Because it seems like if it's been raining for 2 weeks straight, that's as critical a situation to a person living outdoors as a low temperature would be.
Right now it is primarily temperature dependent, but they can call it for other severe weather.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, too, before we go down to our last minute here, about the presence of vets, because somebody mentioned 14% of the population you're finding is vets out there, but vets are what, 5% of the population top? So they're overrepresented in homelessness, it sounds like.
They are overrepresented in homelessness, but for various reasons. I really couldn't specifically say why. I don't know if it's because of their service or other issues that are non-service related, but nationally, there's a percentage that it kind of does outdate. I mean, if you look at that percentage, I'm not really too familiar with the studies for reasons.
Not like we're trying to handicap a horse race here or something, but do you have any guesses, Constance Wilkinson, off the top of your head about what might happen with this year's numbers versus last year's?
I don't. I always hope that they've gone down, which means that more people have connected to services.
All right. Connecting to services is what the Continuum of Care is all about. Constance Wilkerson is the manager of the Continuum of Care in Jackson County. Mike Burke is with Access and also with Support Services for Veteran Families. Thank you both for joining us to talk about the Point in Time Homeless Count, and best of luck tonight.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.